and welcome, Merhaba Behosh Geldenez, to our podcast, Talking Round North Cyprus, where we chat with lots of different people who have something to do with the Turkish Republic of North Cyprus. We've covered all sorts of subjects over these past couple of years. I couldn't do it without my very good friend, Roger Barra. I'm here at the moment. Well, the sun's trying to peek through in Northampton. I'm at BBC Northampton, although I must just say this podcast is nothing to do with the BBC. Just in case anybody's questioning that, I just happen to be here working in my lunch hour. And my good friend Roger Barra is over there in the TRNC. You're in Lapta at the moment because you've got a big party tonight, haven't you, Rog?
Yes, and it's funny enough, Sarah, hello everybody, by the way. It's Conrad, who was featured in one of our early podcasts. It was the Namibian one. And really sadly, Conrad has got to leave the TRNC against, you know, his wishes, really. And I am going to chat with him before he leaves to find out why and what it's like for him to leave such a peaceful, virtually crime-free island. Of course, it's not entirely, but virtually, to go back to a place where you've got to be looking over your shoulder every minute of the day that you're outside, you know, in case you get clobbered. And I think it's going to make quite a moving interview.
Yeah. But before that, you've got a part two. What are you wearing? I understand it's out of Africa.
I'm actually wearing a real Indian, it's out of Asia, this actually, an Indian shirt. When we've been looking online, it can be quite African as well in style. And I bought it. I bought two, in fact, for when I was reporting for the BBC from Delhi in 2010, which was the Commonwealth Games over in Delhi in 2010. So what? That's 12 years ago now. And when I put it on the first day, all the reporters from England all took the mickey, said, oh, look at him trying to be Indian. Look. And by the end of the first day, in 35 degrees of dusty Delhi heat, they're all saying, where'd you get this from? Where can we get one?
Very smug.
I tell you what. They do work. Oh, my goodness. It really took the heat away. I mean, it's white. It's a white long shirt. I've been asked, you know, did you go commando? But it's too dusty and too many insects to risk that. So I didn't, no. In case you want to know.
No. Okay. But there is a party in Lapta tonight. So
well, that is Conrad's happens. Party. It's his birthday. And it's also going to be a leaving party as well. So it's quite sad. But I did chide him, though, for holding it on a Friday evening when my beloved Arsenal are playing Manchester City in the FA Cup. And I said, how could you do this to me, Conrad? You know, I can't miss your party, but, you know, the same night as Arsenal. And I think it's Arsenal's first match on Friday night for 5 years.
So there we go. That would be brilliant. Well, I hope you have a great time and we look forward to hearing from Conrad about how things have panned out for him. So that's going to be fun tonight. But you've had a bit of a sad week in as much that you had to go to a funeral, didn't you, of a mutual friend of ours, a gentleman called Roger Brash. And actually, when I was over at Christmas and New Year, just gone, sadly, on New Year's Eve, Roger had a terrible embolism, didn't he? And I think we've spoken already about the fact that I went to give blood. I was O positive, or am O positive, and the right age, and went to give blood for him. I know, sadly, very sadly, he's since died. But the funeral was on Wednesday. So how was that, Rog?
Well, as a funeral in what is called the International Cemetery in Iskele, which still isn't completed, but at least it's somewhere where you can pay your last respects and have someone buried. It was sad, but we made sure it was a celebration of life. But you know what? The whole situation has brought up so many issues for elderly expats. Getting a death certificate took 5.5 hours, and without the help of two or three incredible individuals who I won't name because they don't do it for kudos. They do it because they know what to do, but we are going to interview them. And things like power of attorney, if you've got a house to sell, if you've got cars to sell, very little family, what happens to them? How can you get power of attorney if someone has already passed away? The questions is what's happened to our close group of friends. There are so many questions it's brought up that we have to find the answers for, which we eventually did. But I've got to tell you, it's been an administrative nightmare. And what we would like to do in this podcast in the next few weeks is talk to the people that know exactly what you do, how you do it. More importantly, what should you do before you're faced with this situation? So if you come to live here and, you know, you're in advancing years like so many of us are, what should you absolutely make sure you've got done and covered with lawyers, you know, with the local municipality, whatever you might need. So we will be covering that in the next few weeks. I think it's absolutely essential, because when you come over here to paradise, the last thing you really think about, what happens if one of us go? What happens if we both get killed in a car crash? Where does that leave our family in the UK, or in my case as well, in Denmark, in Jersey? How is it going to be managed? So we're going to get as much advice as we can and hopefully put people, you know, you don't want to think about it, but it's something you really do and you need to do it like pretty shortly, and then you can enjoy the rest of your retirement.
It threw up a lot of concerns for people when Roger was ill, even when he was ill. And to be fair, you know, we all know how administrative it is in the TRNC when you're alive, you know, just getting things, you know, just going to the relevant places, even just getting your car registered can take days. So, yeah, definitely. We'll definitely cover that. And of course, if anybody has any advice or would be able to speak to us, then please do get in touch with us. The details are all at the end of the podcast, because obviously we'd love to be able to pass that on to other people and just put people's minds at rest. But anyway, RIP Roger, and Sarah as well. We send our love to his partner, Sarah, who sadly, I think, has had to go back to the UK at the end.
Yeah.
Right. OK, well, just to catch up on a couple of things, you were saying that the TRNC is relatively crime free. Yet there was a murder, wasn't there, in Iskele?
Yes, sadly, a 16-year-old young lady was found murdered on a building site in Iskele, apparently not far from Long Beach. And, you know, details are quite sketchy, but apparently the police have a suspect who, according to the police, scarpered over the border, but then, in a bit of cooperation, the Greek authorities sent him back, and he's now in custody and he's appeared in court in Iskele. I won't say any more because obviously it's going through the court system, but it's very rare. It's quite shocking, really, to find this. And, you know, a lot of the murders here are crimes of passion, and they're usually family orientated, or often, you know, you dissed my dad, therefore I'm going to bash you up. But this appears, well, we don't know, and I'm not going to speculate, but very sad, such a young life.
Yeah.
You know, what an absolute waste, and what an ignominious way to, you know, to end your life. Anyway, we'll keep tabs on that story, and when we know exactly what's happened and what the outcome is, we can let you know. It is on social media, but as I say, I would ignore any speculation until the facts are there. So police are still investigating.
Interesting that the Greek authorities were happy to help. I mean, so often that's the way, isn't it, that on the ground things work between, you know, north and south and, you know, everybody sort of, you know, helps out and that sort of thing. So it's good to know that, you know, they weren't difficult about it and can face justice.
When it comes to common decency, usually the two sides will agree on most things, but it's when the politicians get involved, sadly. Anyway, that's for another day.
I keep getting notifications. I've had to mute them now. And I know when I was there, it was ongoing, but a lot of electricity cuts, you know, that certain, you know, blocks or areas are going to be without their electricity. And I know it can be a bit of a pain. And sometimes, you know, they say it's a couple of hours and then it turns out to be most of the day or whatever like that. One thing, it took Bayrak International off air, did it, the other day, did I hear?
The reports I've read said that Kibtech apparently have said a bill has been unpaid and they cut the supply to the transmitter.
Oh, wow.
Now, when that happens, of course, the generators are supposed to kick in. But apparently there was no diesel, so it didn't happen. So they went off air. And I think it's so ironic. Today's special guest is, you know, well, the most famous presenter in recent times at BIRAC International. But they came back before too long. So it's all back to normal now.
All was not lost. Yes, I remember. It's one of those things when you work in radio, if there's even a couple of seconds silence, you immediately go, oh, what's happened? What's gone? What's going on? Sort of thing. So, yes, I can imagine if it went all right. Yes. And as you say, our special guest today is Denise Phillips, better known maybe as Radio Angel to all her followers on social media and those that listen to her. And it was absolute delight to meet up with her when I was over just sort of between Christmas and New Year. We went along, didn't we, to BIRAC International. She's got an amazing story, which you're just about to hear. My opening question was why she wanted to be a bunny girl. And more importantly, what was the interview process like?
Well, I'll happily tell you that, actually. I didn't tell my mum and dad. I was living at home. And I'd been to dinner at the club with somebody and I'd seen all the bunnies and one girl in particular really stuck in my mind. And I thought, oh, I'll try and do that. I think I was quite confident, really, looking back at 17. And so I wrote to the club and they wrote back and I had to go for an interview. And the interview was quite good. It was Ingrid Seward actually interviewed me, and she's a journalist. Yeah. She covers
Majesty magazine.
Right. And I got through that bit, and then we had to do what they called the cattle call, but we had to have an interview in a bikini, and we'd walk up and down. And I remember the night before, I was asking my mum to put fake tan on me, which is quite new then at 17, and she was doing sort of the top of my back. I was going, no, put it low, put it low. She said, well, who's going to see it there, you know? And anyway, did the interview, got the job, and told my mum and dad, and they were really, really pleased with me. And Playboy was so good, they invited the mums and dads in with you for all the new girls to have dinner and have a look around and meet our bunny mother, because it was all very well run, very safe, very innocent really in those days, not as people kind of imagine it. And it was a really, really good job. I was earning very good money, more than my dad was at that time. Very safe, very protected, and, you know, great friendships built up at that time with the other girls that were there. And the initial girl that I saw there became my best friend, and she's a godmother to my daughter. So, and she has a place in Northern Cyprus.
Wow. There we go. More Playboy bunnies.
There's a few of us here.
Yeah. So was that in London?
That was in London, 45 Park Lane. Wow. And the building's still there, but the Sultan of Brunei owns it now. But it has very, very fond memories, that place.
What does a Playboy bunny actually do?
Well, we had all different jobs in the club. So there was like a photo bunny who took all the the photographs of all the people that came in. There were cocktail bunnies that served the drinks, and there were croupier bunnies. And because I did some sort of maths test in my interview, I was trained to deal punto banco, which is like baccarat, and roulette and blackjack. And so I was on the tables. So that was really good. Dealing to the good and the great, some very famous people used to come in.
Oh, yes, go on, drop some names.
Well, at that time, there was a lot of Arabs in London because it was sort of 74, 75, there was a lot of money. But we used to get people like all the famous tennis players used to come in, Robert De Niro, Omar Sharif. Before my time there, it was the Beatles that used to come in. And some of the girls did actually marry very well.
Right.
At that time.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm sure.
I'm interested in baccarat because there's no skill involved in that. And I wonder why people gamble on it, because you either back the banker, don't you, or the player.
You do.
Absolutely no skill.
There's no skill, but they do count cards. So you're playing with a certain amount of decks, six decks, so they're working out how many kings and aces there are. You know, it's that sort of skill. But it's a very elegant game. You sit there with a long wooden pallet on punto banco, and the customers draw the cards. And, of course, they want to draw extra cards by mistake on purpose so that they can see which the first card of the next hand's going to be. So you can, like, get them right across the knuckles of the pallet to stop them if you're good and skilled, which we were.
And, so what... made you decide to leave? And where did you go sort of from there?
Yeah, well, I had been an ice skater before that. I was not professional. I was a competitive ice skater. And I was offered a job at a new sports centre called the Michael Sobel Sports Centre, teaching ice skating. And I'd done a few years at Playboy, and I always thought, you know, I wanted to go back to the ice, and it was a lovely job opportunity. And so I left. But a lot of the girls at Playboy did used to leave and go back or get leave of absence. You know, they were very flexible like that. Some of the girls were doing film work or whatever, and they just let you leave and go back. As it happened, I didn't go back, but I knew that I could have done. And so I went to teach at Sobel. And the director there, Stuart Cameron, I saw many years later in the harbour here in Northern Cyprus. So it just shows you, doesn't it? Everyone comes here.
Everyone comes here, yeah. Indeed, yeah.
And ice skating took you to the USA, didn't it?
It did. A friend of mine at Sobel married an American, and she went to live in Connecticut, and she set up a skating school called Mites on Ice, which was basically teaching little boys how to skate before they learnt to play ice hockey. And so she invited me over there, and so I did some amount of time with her there in Connecticut, in Springfield Ice Rink, teaching ice skating. Bitterly cold, really bitterly cold, and an open air rink. So we were all done up in our fur muffs, and you know, I've never been so cold in my life, because you've got a blade under your foot, and it's kind of dragging that coldness up your whole body. But I think it was character building.
So how old were you then? I mean, what sort of age are you at the moment then in this tale?
I was early 20s, right. Very early. I was probably about 20.
Right, okay.
So still very young, yeah. When I look back on it. And I was quite intrepid, really.
I was going to say, yeah, from doing that 17 to...
And my mum and dad were very accepting, yeah, you know, and happy for me.
Yeah. So how does someone teaching people to skate become an illusionist's assistant?
I was going to say, it couldn't be more different.
It was another job opportunity, really. My brother was working with someone. He was working part-time for a company, and he was an illusionist, Roger Blakiston. He's in Arizona now. He might well listen to this interview, because I'm still in touch with him. He's a poet now, and he still does his magic. He's called Jolly Roger now, but he was a sorcerer then. And his wife was pregnant, and he was looking for a temporary assistant. And my brother suggested me, and I obviously fit the bill. And so he trained me, which, you know, you're trained to be put in little caskets and, you know, produced out things. It could be quite scary, really. Yeah. He was very good. He trained me how to do it all.
Oh, does he cut you in half?
Yeah, we did the mismade lady. We did one where they put the knives in the boxes.
Oh, yeah.
And he did it a bit wrong, and I came out with blood dripping down the side of my head like this slowly. Oh, no. But everyone clapped because they thought it was part of the act. As you do.
And I guess you can't tell us how it's done.
No, I was an associate member of the Magic Circle. It's magic, isn't it?
Yes, of course it is. Magic. Of course it is. That's amazing. So did you go back to the UK then to do that?
I was in the UK, I went back to the UK. I was in the UK when I did that. We toured around. We did the group called Imagination. Mm. We did their British tour because they had It's Just an Illusion was their song.
Yeah.
And Roger used to produce me out of a table. There was a table, and he used to build a crystal casket on it and cover it with cloth, pull it back, and I'd be within the crystal casket. But one time, the opening act, which was before us, went on a bit long, and he thought I would have suffocated by then. So he's never so happy as to see me actually appear smiling.
Alive.
And we finished at the Dominican. Tottenham Court Road was the last one. My mum came to that. She said her hearing was never the same after that. She sat near one of those big speakers. But yeah, that was great fun. And then we went on the ships to work.
Right, because you shared a room with Sunita, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, I
that,
did.
Was that when
I
you were
did.
Doing the Imagination tour?
Yeah, she was one of the dancers. She used to come sort of syncopating down this big piano key sort of walkway thing, and I was sharing a room with her.
Amazing.
I always say she ended up with David Essex and I ended up here. Yeah. But who was the winner? Me, of course.
Wasn't she linked to Simon Cowell
Yeah,
as
she
well?
Was with him
she,
as well.
She was with Simon Cowell for
yeah,
a while.
Yeah, she was. Yes. And her mum was one of the original dancers in Hair in the 60s, where they took all their clothes off. She was quite famous, her mum.
Wow. How interesting. You must have loads of people in your address book.
Well, a few. I like to say that I have, you know, Jane Torville, Christopher Dean, that Jane Torville's my Facebook friend. From all those years ago.
Amazing.
That is extraordinary. You went back then to being a croupier, didn't you? But
over
the other side of the world, in Australia.
Yeah. So there was an advert in the Evening Standard. I used to love the Evening Standard. There was a little advert, and it said six girls wanted for Australian cruise. So I thought, well, I'll apply, you know, why not? And the interview was at Hilton on Park Lane, and I went to the, actually it was a room, when you think I hadn't told anyone where I was going, knocked on the door of this room, and this girl answered the door in like a Chong Sam, you know, a Chinese dress. And I thought, what's going on here? I better be a bit careful. But she was one of the girls who was selected to go on the cruise. And this was going to be our outfit. She was trying it on. And the guy wasn't the owner of the company. And he just took the first six girls that came because he couldn't be bothered. So us first six that turned up. And again, we made lifelong friends. And we cruised out of... we flew to Split, I think, and we cruised out of there to Australia, and then we cruised round Australia.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I've been to most of the places on the sort of coastal fringe of Australia.
Mm. Well, amongst all that you've done, and I suppose, Sarah, if we'd asked her what she hadn't done in her life, it would have been a shorter podcast for sure. Where does the TRNC come in?
Well, Playboy, very unfortunately, lost its gaming license in the 80s because of various reasons. There was a bit of an infight with another company, and unfortunately, we lost our license. So it was the casino side of Playboy worldwide, including America, that kept the whole of the clubs going, not the magazine or, you know, people think Playboy bunnies. We were nothing to do with the magazine or taking our clothes off. We were purely in the club. So it folded. So there was all these girls with various skills looking for jobs. And again, I think it was in the Evening Standard, there was an advert to work in Cyprus for the summer. And so me and my friends, my original friend that I'd first seen at Playboy, my daughter's godmother, we applied, and it turned out to be John Aziz, who has got a celebrity hotel in Lapta. And he was very kind of, at that time, entrepreneurial. He'd set up a travel company bringing people here. He was one of the first travel companies that actually, I mean, the intervention was only in 74, so this is in 1980, to bring tourists here. And he had a little casino. And of course, we could deal. So he brought us over, and we all thought, we didn't have no idea. We thought Cyprus was one island. We came with Greek drachma. We had absolutely no idea where we were coming to. You know, we were young and got off the plane, and it was at the time that when Erjan, you could actually get on the tarmac, and I think someone had told someone that there were six Playboy bunnies arriving to the island when, you know, there weren't even any tourists here, so the whole of the country turned out to see us get off the plane.
Expecting you in your little tails. And
exactly,
your
exactly. And do you remember Yasha from Veranda? I don't know if that restaurant was open when you were here. He was working for the Ministry of Tourism, and he always says he was the first man in Cyprus to kiss me, because he was there to greet us all, and he kissed me on both cheeks. So it was quite an experience.
Can you give us some idea of what life was like in 1980 here? Because it's obviously very different.
Very different. I mean, we think it's a bit unspoiled now, but say, for instance, between Guinea and Lapta Celebrity, where the Celebrity still is now, there wasn't one shop. There wasn't one restaurant. It wasn't really a very good road. There was no houses along that road. There were very, very few shops, and you couldn't really buy any imported goods. Not that that mattered. But, you know, when we drove, we were staying in Ambelia accommodated, which is quite a long way from there. Sometimes we'd drive home from work or into work, we wouldn't see another car. So it was very, very different.
Mm.
Hard to imagine.
All this time that you, all these different things that you've done and that you do, were there times where you felt nervous? I mean, you're very confident and obviously very sort of driven in that sort of sense and adventurous as well. But were there times you sort of thought, oh, I don't know, have I done the right thing? Or did you always sort of go, do you know what, I'm just going to try?
Yeah, when it was just me, it was different. But when I was in South Africa, I went to work in South Africa for Sol Kersner, who had Sun City. And we were there coming up to 94 when apartheid was coming to an end and de Klerk was going to be out, Mandela was going to be in. And I felt frightened then for the children. It was getting fairly dodgy there, and the ANC was targeting soft targets like school buses. And I remember we had bars put on our window, and I remember the children saying, is that to stop us getting out at night? You know, it was like, no, don't want to tell you why we're doing that. And we left, and we both, my husband and I, came here to Northern Cyprus, and we just felt so relieved from one extreme to another. So that was the only place that I ever felt a bit nervous, and really it was more for the children than me.
Yeah, I was going to say that when you when you have children, that's when you sort of have to think twice, don't you, in a way.
So you came to work at the Celebrity Hotel in Apta. You then went back to the UK, and then, as you just said, you've
came
come back to the TRNC. Why? Why did you come back?
I came back because it was actually really after South Africa. We went from South Africa back to the UK. We really couldn't settle in the UK. I'd been here before, obviously. My husband hadn't. So we came here and the children went into primary school here, which there was no private schools. It was the Kokkaloo in Karalanlu. So they immediately had to learn Turkish. My daughter, she was about five, and she said to me, she remembers thinking, I don't understand what they're saying and no one understands me at all. And so, you know, she learnt, but they both learnt to speak Turkish. And my husband got a job here, and then he was moved to Istanbul, and then he decided to go back to England, and I stayed here with children.
Right, right. So, and you've been here ever since?
Yes, I've been here ever since. This is, I think, my 28th year at BRT.
Wow.
Something we were discussing on the way to come and meet you today, you've been such a globetrotter. You've done so many things. It seems strange to us that you were happy to settle in a quiet little place. It's so unlike the rest of your early life.
Yeah. I think once you've done all that, though, you've had all that sort of life. I was very happy to be here. And I'm very happy to be at BRT, you know, at Barrack International. I was very lucky to find this as my little niche here. I think probably, had I not been working here, I may not have stayed, thinking about it, because...
How did you get to work here?
Well, when I came here and my husband had... we had separated, I needed to find a job. I wasn't working up until then. And I'd always... Obviously, I've been a skater, and I'd always done step aerobics, things like that. And I'd been qualified. I had a RSA dance to music qualification from Guildford College. And so I set up some step aerobics classes, which were very well attended, and some of my aerobicizers are still here now. And you know, we miss those days. It was great fun, but very difficult to get music, you know, no internet to download, no CD shops that we have now. So I knew Jan's sister Idil Akçal, because she ran a nursery school for my children, and I came here to see if I could get some music from the archives. And the rest is history, really. Haluk Aygun, who employed DJ Zell, Nevra, I think, me, Jan. I met him in the cafeteria. When I got home, I got a phone call saying, would you like to do a spot on the radio, a weekly spot? Mm-hmm. They couldn't pay me, but I could advertise my classes.
A bit like the BBC. Yeah.
sounds familiar.
Exactly. And then it just progressed from that. I got my own radio show. I did a TV show called Video Angel for many years. And the main event started right at the beginning, in, I think, 96, and it's carried on ever since.
Amazing.
So you've been doing the main event
every week.
Let me work this quickly out, 26 years.
Yeah.
Well, how on earth do you find all the guests?
Well, often they find me. People say that, and especially when I find I like slightly quirky people, they say, how did you find that person? I say, well, they find me. Mm. But... I mean, you know, I found you through my friend from Playboy who has a house in Hilltop, or did have, and she said, oh, I've met someone from the BBC, it's very interesting. So people are always on the lookout for me. And this I think by the fact that people are here in Northern Cyprus means there's something interesting about them. And I think everyone's got a story to tell.
That's exactly what I think as well. And I think that's why we do the podcast, because we feel that as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, why would people end up here in the TRNC?
I love your podcast. Catching up. I love that it is a podcast, because unfortunately the main event isn't. It's just broadcast when it's broadcast, so I can dip in and dip out. I like listening to Kate Smith. I've recently listened to the Gazzy. I've listened to most of them now.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Listening in the car when I'm driving.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, yes, that's what we hope people will do. Yeah.
And what about the changes that you've seen here in the TRNC? Changes for the better, changes for the worse? Tell us what you feel.
Well, you're always a bit nostalgic for the past, you know, when I could go anywhere and know everyone and everyone would know me. But I just think that the change here is slower than in the rest of the world. I mean, over the last however many years that I've... 42 years since I first came here. Okay, of course, there's been massive changes, but it's still better than anywhere else I want to live. And I think there's a real heart and kindness to it. And people do look after each other. You know, we have our listeners who we consider friends, really. And certain ones, if they don't comment on our posts. I think we have check and make sure they're all right. Some of them are of a certain age. I don't think we call it narrow casting, not necessarily broadcasting, but narrow casting to our little, you know, group of listeners. And I don't think you'd find that anywhere else in the world.
So that was the lovely Denise Phillips from BIRAC International Radio, Angel, as she is affectionately known. So amazing ladies who enjoy listening to her on the airwaves, and do, of course, let everybody know that she's on our podcast telling her amazing story. And thank you very much indeed for listening. If you do want to get in touch with us, then you can in the usual ways. We're on social media. We're on Facebook. Just look for Talking Round North Cyprus. Same for Twitter as well. And if you want to get in touch with us in any way, you can email trnc.podcast@gmail.com. I'm Sarah Palmer.
And I'm Roger Barra. Thanks for your company, and we'll talk again very, very soon.